Welcome to Portia Pattern with Bracken Helms, the show where we hear Bracken and his distinguished guests from the Porsche community patter on about Porsches and all things automotive. Porsche Pattern is sponsored by Circuit 64. Circuit 64 creates authentic automotive apparel made for like-minded automotive enthusiasts. The links for Circuit 64 are in the show notes. Okay, let's get to it.
Rod Emery, Part 1. Now, first of all, full disclaimer, understand this. This was done in 2018. Remember, I used to do interviews and I would just get them on my phone and then I transcribe them to be published in like magazines or whatever. This is one of those old ones. It was done in 2018. So if he says in there last year or 2 years ago, then that was 2017, 2016. So again, the audio is probably not going to be that great because it was done when I used to just transcribe. But the main purpose of me saying this is I don't want you to be confused with dates and it causes problems. Rod told me to take out everything that the dates were a little bit messed up with. So I took all those out. But like if he says, oh, I started the business X amount of years ago, you're going to add another 5 years because now we're in 2023. Okay, with that being said, what else can I tell you? I can tell you Rod Emery's ridiculously smart. Okay, let me go back and say, when I did this, this was back when people didn't know where his shop was. He sent me a text message and said, here's my address. Do not share this with anybody. I know now he has like open houses and stuff and everybody knows where it's at. But it was very clear, do not give this address to anybody. And when I pulled up, it was unmarked. I had to call him. Me bringing that up has to do with, yeah, he's done a lot of interviews in his day. So when you ask him a question, he's probably already got the answers. But being as this was 5 years ago, that was probably when he hadn't done as many interviews. He probably had still done a bunch. But I say he's smart because, I mean, he's firing questions or the answers back at me as fast as I can throw the questions. Like he's shooting the answers back to me faster than I can come up with the questions. And I have the questions already written down. One more thing I want to say is the best Emery out there is not Rod or Gary or any of the other ones. It's Rod's mom. I was just barely at this Rennsport Reunion 7 and this spunky little upbeat, super happy lady came by my booth, my tent, whatever, at Rennsport Reunion 7. She's just talking to me and we're talking forever. I'm just like, this lady's the greatest lady ever. And so I like go to ask her name and she just points to her shirt and she has an Emery shirt on. And I'm like, oh, you're one of the Emerys? And she's like, yeah, I'm Rod's mom. And then at that point, I'm like, oh, I've actually been to your son's shop. I went there to interview him years ago. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's great. Anyway, here's Rod Emery, part one.
A lot of those cars over there look familiar. Like some of them are like really old. Like they remind me of like ones that I had when I was a kid that I've lost.
Yeah, you know, I've been collecting them for a long time.
So the first one I kind of had issues with, I wanted to ask if what is Emery Motorsports? But then I'm like, should I ask who is Rod Emery?
Right.
Because those are two different things.
I've been in the Porsche racing and restoration business for nearly 30 years. Emery Motorsports started when I was, unofficially when I was 14 years old and built my first 356, started finding, you know, the true potential in a 356 and started vintage racing it. And then it became a full-fledged business in 1996, about 22 years ago when I moved back to Oregon and started my vintage racing and restoration prep business. And, you know, the last 10 years, Emery Motorsports is, you know, primarily focused on building Emery Outlaws, Emery Specials, and Emery RS cars. So really three different types of 356s that all have different performance and styling characteristics.
So you're a third generation. How does it feel to uphold the family tradition?
It's truly an honor to be able to, you know, have such a strong legacy behind me. My grandfather, was in the automotive custom car building business dating back to 1948. And then in 1962, went to work for a Porsche dealership, Chick Iverson. And then my dad started in the Porsche business as a parts manager in the parts department. And then I, you know, had the privilege of being able to learn from both my grandfather and my father, and have made this my life's work. And it's truly an honor.
Who's it going to race? Is their guy at Gunner Racing that's your uncle?
So Kevin Jeanette, that owns Gunner Racing, is my adopted uncle. Oh, he's okay. Not really my uncle. He has just been a very close friend and mentor to me my entire career in this business. He was a customer and good friend of my father's, and dating back in the 80s, when I first met him as a child, he's always been there and has had my back.
Tell me about your racing past. You race BMX?
So
or you just rode that?
I did. So growing up, I started racing BMX when I was about 7 years old. Used to race at the Orange BMX track, and there used to be one in Irvine. And then we also had one kind of a makeshift BMX racetrack in Trabuco Canyon, California, where I grew up. And then when I was 10, I started racing three-wheelers, and that carried on to racing four-wheelers by the time I was 12, and then went on to race ATVs, both in the Mickey Thompson Off-Road Series and Grand Nationals. Then by the time I was 15, 16, I was racing a stadium super light in the Mickey Thompson Off-Road Series, which was a single seater buggy, similar to like a UTV today. Right. Raced that. And then once I was 16, I started racing a Porsche 356, and primarily in vintage racing. But then in about 2004, I decided to give higher level pro racing a shot. And from 2003 until about 2006-07, I was racing a GT3 Cup car, and did a year and a half racing in the Grand Am Rolex Series. And then at that point,
see, I wasn't even aware of that.
Yeah. So I ran a GT3 Cup car in the Rolex Series 2004, 2005. And then pulled away from doing all that just to primarily focus on the business and just some, vintage racing again.
Okay. Did you always know that you were going to follow in your like father and do the same sort of thing?
As a kid growing up, I just had a love for motorsports and racing and didn't know exactly when I was young if I was going to become, one of the kind of main players in the Porsche 356 world. But of course, being around the cars for 30 years now, professionally in the business, I've learned from so many amazing, people that have come before me and that, have taken me under their wing and really just kind of carved my own path. But, didn't always know it, but sure, definitely grateful that this is where my life's work has ended up.
So you got your style from your dad and your body work from your grandpa. Does that make you the superhuman Emery?
I think that I've been very fortunate to be surrounded by, some of the most creative and talented craftsmen. My grandfather was a pioneer in his field, and my uncle, has done some of the most high level Porsche restorations in the world. And then my dad, being such a creative guy and knowing the cars, I've been able to draw off of all three of them. And
when you say uncle, do you mean
my uncle Don? So my dad's younger brother. Okay. He is Don Emery. He worked as my grandfather, Neil Emery's apprentice, in the body shop at the dealership, and then went on to open his own Porsche restoration shop. So I had all three of these guys to really draw off of. Where my superhuman strength comes from, I think, is the fact that I require very little sleep, and I make the most of my time.
So Rich Brazil wanted me to ask, I was asking him for possible questions. He doesn't know a whole lot about your grandfather, Neil. He knows Valley Customs, and he knows that he started with the brother-in-law,
Clayton Jensen. So,
like, how did he get started?
My grandfather, back in the 20s and 30s, had a detailing business and here in the Valley, detailing cars at the Warner Brothers studio lot, and then went to war, was stationed at Alameda Military Base. Okay. And at that point, really learned and honed his skills in fabrication. And then after the war, he and his brother-in-law, Clayton Jensen, started Valley Custom Shop. And they were really the pioneers in channeling and sectioning cars.
Okay. So did you ever have a normal job? I was talking to your uncle, Ken.
Yeah.
And he was telling me about some job that seemed like it was had nothing to do with cars.
Insurance?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It was at Rensport, last Rensport.
Yeah. Did I ever have a regular job? Growing up, when I was a kid, I had a detailing business. So I was a bit of an entrepreneur as a young boy. And then I went to work for, Tom Topping he owned a swap meet, called the Long Beach High Performance Swap Meet, and, used to run the gate and do a bunch of, administrative stuff for him when I was about 12 years old till I was about 16. My mom and dad had a little grocery store, so I stocked the shelves, but none of those were a regular job. When I was 18 to 19 years old, I did work at an insurance company up in Seattle, was learning the insurance business, thinking that I wanted to be an underwriter, which was kind of a weird, diversion from all of this stuff, but just to, really kind of dip my toe in the water a little bit to see if there was something out there that was another, thing for me to do rather than build cars. But I quickly realized that I'm not a desk guy, an office guy. So that was the only time I actually got a paycheck, like from an established business, was from 1992 to 93 when I was 18 years old for 1 year.
Okay.
I've been self-employed the rest of my life.
Okay. So you used to help clients with their racing efforts. When and why did you stop doing that?
I had the vintage racing business was really the beginning of what started Emory Motorsports, building and restoring vintage race cars, taking people to the track, offering storage, transportation, hospitality, logistics, and then at track services and support. And then driver coaching. So that was really the business was pretty complex, but it was all about providing a platform to be able to let people go racing without the hassle. That ran until about 2008. And when the economy started to slow down a little bit and people were slowing down their racing efforts, I found that as a time for me to kind of exit that type of business. Primarily because I was just tired of traveling. And the disruption of what a racing business requires, where you're on the road all the time. Right. And my children were now 6 and 10 years old and not as easy to just pack them up and take them places. And it was an opportunity to just kind of break away from that and to get back into just doing primarily shop work and then selective track support.
Okay, so the perception is, well, it's obviously changing quickly now. The perception is you build just outlaws, period, but you restored these cars.
With the addition, people know me as the guy that builds 356 Outlaws and, a few 911 hot rods. But also, I've restored a number of cars that are Porsches with significant race history and or, doing point-in-time restorations like the 356 SL, the Le Mans winning car from 1951, or 906 136, which was a 906 from that was primarily a Northwest race car that I restored back to a point in its racing history, and then just got through freshening up and restoring 906-011. So cars with significant history or racing backgrounds, I will restore them back to a point in time.
Okay. I know people in the past use the term outlaw like it was sacrilegious, but you guys have ideas and style-wise. You wanted it to do how you hoped Porsche would intend it to do rather than just chop stuff up and go crazy.
Yeah, I look at the cars that we build as an evolution of the Porsche design. And if they would have continued building the 356 past 1965, putting some of their more, some of their later parts and technology into them, that's the way I feel that our cars are. Everything on them is a Porsche part from some model, in Porsche's history. And the 356 is just a wonderful platform for me to be able to evolve and expand, the driving capabilities and the driving experience for our clients.
your father and your grandfather worked at Chick Iverson. I was just wondering, how special was it hanging out? I mean, because I brought this up because going to work with my dad was like the greatest thing ever when I was younger.
Yeah, Chick Iverson was one of the main Porsche dealerships here in Southern California. And with my grandfather being the body shop manager, my dad being the parts manager, you know, our family was deeply, you know, the roots were deeply embedded in that dealership. By the time I was born, my dad was no longer an employee at the main dealership. He had partnered with Chick Iverson to start Porsche Parts Obsolete. And so my dad's business was offsite, but there was a lot of interaction between Porsche Parts Obsolete and the dealer because it was still joined in business. So growing up, I spent a lot of my time at the dealership running parts, picking parts up, you know, crawling around the new cars. And it was kind of like my second home.
Right.
So it was pretty special to be able to have that opportunity to be that involved in a Porsche dealership at such a young age.
With setting up Valley Customs around the corner from Jack McCaffrey Porsche, was that just happenstance or was it kind of planned for the?
Well, Valley Custom Shop was established before the Porsche dealership that, that McAfee had. So I think it was just a coincidence that they were just down the street from each other. But, you know, there were so many things right here in the San Fernando Valley. The car culture really, you know, this was hot rodding at its finest. You know, right. Everything from all the custom car builders like Barris and Dean Jeffries and Ed Roth and my grandfather, you know, at Valley Custom Shop, SoCal Speed Shop. And then you had all the sports car, you know, enthusiasts and builders and everybody within a 25, 30 mile radius of here. You had Jack McAfee, you know, the Porsche dealership there. You had Competition Motors, John von Neumann. You had Vasek Polak in Hermosa Beach. So you had all of these dealerships with amazing histories right here in the valley. So there was just so much hot rodding history right here.
So we know with Parts Obsolete, people were throwing stuff away. You guys were getting, or he, father was getting it out, getting it from, buying it from Porsche distributors. Yeah. Why or how did he decide to buy out Chick Iverson and why not just keep it the way it was?
Chick Iverson had sold the dealership in around 1984, 85, roughly. And at that point, then my dad had an opportunity to buy Porsche Parts Obsolete and separate it from the dealership. So rather than my dad, you know, being under the thumb of another boss, he had an opportunity to purchase Porsche Parts Obsolete outright and establish it as its own standalone business.
Okay. So your dad was building Concours cars at one point, got tired of it and thought he could build cars that are just as good without fancy parts. Is that kind of what started the Outlaw?
Yeah. I mean, really the, you know, my dad, just like myself, you know, my dad grew up, you know, with a father that is, in my opinion, one of the greatest car customizers. And so naturally, it's in our blood to customize and hot rod stuff. And so, you know, my dad had a few Concours cars, you know, in the 70s and early 80s that he, did. And then he wanted to have a little bit more fun with the cars. And that was about the time that I started working with him. And he'd bring a car in that he had bought that, you know, together we would lower and you know, drill holes in it and put fog lights and hood straps. And all my dad's friends would come around and say, "Oh, you guys are outlaws." And that's really how the outlaw movement began right there in Costa Mesa.
Quickly was the first car under that thinking, but the sunroof coupe was what brought about the term.
Yeah. So the number 18 car with the Goldie sunroof was the car that was the exact point in time when our friend James Cannon, who is a jeweler, made the first outlaw badge. And that was kind of the beginning of all that. At the same time, right about the same time, my dad and I were also building his yellow right-hand drive car, and I was building my number 80 53 coupe. So it was really kind of all the cars, but I think the first car that got the badge was the, I believe, the number 18.
Why did the Emerys move to Oregon?
In 1990, I was racing in Seattle at the Kingdome in a stadium superlight at the Mickey Thompson Off-Road Championships. And it was at that point that I decided that after I graduated high school, I was going to move to Seattle to pursue an engineering degree at University of Washington. it gave our family an opportunity to explore the Northwest. And when I made the decision to move to Seattle, that was the point where my mom and dad decided, you know what, it's time to have a look outside of Southern California.
So it was because of you.
It was because of me going to Seattle in the first place.
Yeah. Okay.
And in 1992, I moved to Seattle, and it was 1990, about that same time, 91, 90, or let's see. I moved to Seattle in 1992, and it was right at that point in time that my parents sold the general store and began moving Porsche Parts Obsolete up, but officially didn't get the parts business moved up there until 93.
Do you miss Oregon?
I still have my home in Oregon and all my workshops there, which are now just stacked full of parts. And although Amy and the kids and I moved ourselves back down here to Southern California and the restoration part of the business, we still have our home there and enjoy Oregon now as more of a vacation get away from Southern California spot.
You started Emory Motorsports while you were in Oregon.
Correct. Officially started Emory Motorsports in 1996.
So why did you move to LA?
In 2009, my son Zane landed a role on a Disney show and an Audi commercial. And it gave us an opportunity to let him pursue his dream of being an actor. And I operated the business in Oregon and had my family down here and was commuting back and forth every week until 2012, when I made the decision to relocate the employees and pack the shop up and move it here. But it was originally just a short-term move. But then once Zane had the success that he did, then we decided that we would make it a more permanent arrangement, because family's most important to me, and being home with my wife and kids every night is my primary goal. And so then the secondary effect of all that was that, Southern California has a much stronger car community, car culture, especially right now with, the kind of global awareness of Porsches. Southern California has always been, but really is the mecca or hotspot for, most Porsche related activities right now.
And the Emory Special, that was your first big solo venture?
That was the first special bodied car that that I had built. And I did that car in 1998. But yeah, that was my first kind of real breakout car, where I modified everything, changed everything on it. Everything from 944 turbo aluminum trailing arms and, 901 transmission and, modifying the body shapes and putting a trailer hitch on it and taking a 4,500 mile journey, towing a trailer behind it. Really, that car was my.
See, that's crazy to me. Like when I was following you on Instagram, well, I've been following you for a while, but when you went up to the camp out last year, I'm the one that made the comment like, oh my God, this guy really is hardcore, because it's like, you used it like it's like 50 station wagon.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh man.
Yep. For me, these cars are all about it. Adventures and taking them places and having fun with them.
It was super cool seeing those pictures with your little bike in the trailer.
Yeah.
Do you still get engines from Rossport?
Yeah. Jeff Gamroff builds all of our engines.
Okay. So are you still pretty involved with everything that goes on in Oregon?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, my dad and I are partners in Porsche Parts Obsolete, which is still, a functioning business. It's scaled down from where it used to be, just so that my dad can enjoy life a little bit more. But we're partners in that business, and I still have my home and everything there. And then Jeff Gamroth in Oregon still does the engine assembly work on all of our four-cylinder 911 engines.
Okay. How long have you known the Brazils?
I've known Jim and Rich most of my life, but really the last 15, 20 years, buying parts from them, seeing them at events. They always came to the campouts. And, the past 10 years, I've been, a regular customer of Easy Porsche, buying stuff from him whenever I needed 911 parts or, various 356 bits. I'd be missing, some door handles and he'd send them to me, or I'd be looking for 901 trailing arms or 901 transmissions. So oftentimes I'd go up there with a truck, or Rich would load a truck up and bring that stuff down to me. And then last year when Richard decide, or when Jim, you know, made the decision to sell the building and gave me the opportunity to buy the 356 and 911 stuff, I jumped on it because, for one, I didn't want that stuff to be kind of dispersed all over the world, but also the stuff that he had wasn't regular parts that the average Porsche owner needs, but it's exactly the parts that I need to build the Emery Outlaws and Specials that I do, because I'm infusing 911 components into a 356.
The Campout.
Yeah.
How did that originate?
So the Campout started in 1994 when we were having an event inviting some of our customers and friends to come to our property in McMinnville, Oregon, and camp and enjoy themselves. And then that tradition carried on for 18 consecutive years until 2012 with events that had numbers up 750, 800 people. And then when I moved the shop back down here in 2012, or when I started the migration of moving the shop down here, we decided that was the end of having a yearly regular camp out because, you know, my dad is kind of like the mascot and, you know, camp host. But when it comes to actually running the functional part of the camp out, it was my wife, Amy, my mom, Linda, and myself that, and all of my siblings that ran it and made it happen. So when Amy and I left, there just wasn't the infrastructure to be able to continue it. But we did decide in 2017 to do a 5-year reunion, which was our 19th camp out.
Yeah, Rich was saying you guys put a lot of time into that.
Oh, the camp out's a ton of work, you know.
What does it mean to you and your family?
What does it mean to us, the camp out? The camp out's just a really cool event that gives us an opportunity to invite everybody to our home, camp in our backyard, and, you know, it's always been a very special event. My kids love it because, you know, it's just partying and games and fun and camping, you know, in the backyard with 1,000 of your closest Porsche friends.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, comment, like, and share with your friends. Feel free to send questions or suggestions to the email in the description of the show. Special thanks to our sponsor, Circuit 64. Goodbye for now. We hope we can get together again for our next episode. Now get out there and enjoy the cars and the people.